Welcome to Bishop Sheridan Presents. As you can tell from the sound of my voice, I am not Bishop Sheridan. I am Bill Howard, editor of the Colorado Catholic Herald here at the Diocese of Colorado Springs. Bishop Sheridan is out of town right now, but I am hosting because we wanted to make sure we were able to sit down for a little while with two very special guests that we have in town on September 18th, which is when this is being recorded. Right now we are actually at the Pikes Peak Center backstage, and you may hear some rehearsing going on in the background as well. But I'm here with Christopher West and Mike Mangione, who are here to do a very special, unique, innovative, artistic presentation of the theology of the body, which is going to be the theme of our show. And we're going to get into that and spend a great deal of the show talking about theology of the body and fill these hearts. But first, I just want to quickly introduce Christopher and Mike. Thanks for taking the time out.
Bill, really glad to be here with you.
Yeah, thank you for having us with you today. It's great.
I guess we'll start by having the two of you maybe just briefly explain how each of you came into touch with the theology of the body. I know most of our listeners probably know who you are, but for those who don't, maybe just a quick introduction. And I should add real quickly, too, that our readers of the Herald will know Christopher from his body language column that he did for 4 years for our paper and was a huge, huge element in our paper, too.
I was 23 when I was first introduced to this theology of the body. It was 1993, and it was about 3 years at that point that I had been really committed to my Christian faith, and I had been studying the scriptures with an earnest desire to want to understand God's plan for man and woman. And I thought I, in my own prayer and study of scripture, was beginning to see a theme that God really wants to marry us. You know, the prophet Hosea talks about God espousing himself to us forever, and the Bible begins with the marriage of Adam and Eve, and it ends with the marriage of Christ and the church. And right in the middle of the Bible, we have this beautiful erotic love poetry, the Song of Songs. And I began to speak in these spousal terms that God wants to marry us. And I began to see man and woman's relationship as a sign here on earth of this ultimate destiny of union with God forever in what the scripture calls the marriage of the Lamb. I was sharing this vision that I was learning in prayer and study of scripture with various Christian friends I had, and most people thought I was pretty crazy. And then one woman who taught theology at a high school, she said, "You must have read the Pope's Theology of the Body." I said, "No, what's that?" She said, "Wow, you're talking just like the Pope." I said, "You got to be kidding me." So I read this Theology of the Body with great enthusiasm, and I knew then, Bill, that I was going to spend the rest of my life studying this work and sharing it with the world. I felt like I had discovered a banquet that really, really satisfied the hunger in the human heart for love. So that was the beginning of it, and here we are 17 years later.
I'm not very familiar with the theology of the body. I'll be honest, I don't really know what I'm doing here. I'm just kidding. No, this is Mike. I went to Marquette University in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and I always wanted to be doing music, and so I started playing around town and developing my songwriting, really trying to become a decent songwriter. I was introduced to the theology of the body, I think it was like 2001.
Yeah.
From Christopher. Christopher came to a Schoenstatt Center, a small little center in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin. And a priest who was a spiritual advisor to my girlfriend at the time, encouraged her to go to it. And I wanted to impress her, so I went as well.
Mike's not going to say this, so I'm going to have to just jump in here and
do it
and observe that I noticed Mike from the get-go at this conference where I was speaking, because he was sitting out in the audience with his arms crossed, really not wanting to be there, I could tell. And whenever I find somebody like that in the audience, I start kind of gearing my presentation towards that person, because those people always remind me of myself, very stubborn. But he was there. I knew the girl sitting next to him was his girlfriend. I knew he was there to impress her in some way. Mm-hmm. So that's when Mike and I met. We had a good time staying up late one night talking and singing songs together.
Yeah, and it was funny because Christopher played a song at the end of the talk. And I remember afterwards, everybody standing around Christopher asking, you know, theological questions. I was an environmental scientist, and that's what I was studying in school, and I had no interest in, you know, theology to some degree, but really it wasn't my thing. And everybody's asking Christopher all these theological questions, and I waited and waited, and then when it was my turn, I asked him a question about the song you played, because I was like, "Hey, man, you play guitar." And we just hit it off right there. And I think from that moment forward, we just, through the most random ways, we've just stayed in touch. We don't even have to, we shouldn't discuss some of them. They're kind of embarrassing, but we've just stayed in touch. And so long story short, studying the teaching, just naturally, as you try to, as a man, I try to internalize it and make it a natural way for me to move and live. As a songwriter, it just comes out automatically. If I'm writing from my heart, whether it's a story or an experience, it's going to in some way reflect theology of the body if I am properly attempting to live it and live in tune with it, just by nature of, you know, who I am. So that's how it kind of happened.
Our listeners are actually going to get a treat. We've never actually had live music before and during our show, but we're going to have some today. Do you think maybe your style of music would be different if you hadn't encountered theology of the body? Does that influence not only the lyrics, but the sound as well?
I would say sound, I don't think so, because there's just, I have a liking towards Americana acoustic stuff. But I have to be honest, thematically, I think I have a better understanding of what I'm feeling. But I think if I wasn't familiar with theology of the body, I'd still write about these themes because they are so basic human universal themes in our hearts. So it's the same reason why, you know, I doubt Peter Gabriel, or I doubt Ray LaMontagne, or, you know, even Ryan Adams. I doubt they have a real understanding of theology of the body, but yet the lyrics in their songs reflect a lot of the truths of what this teaching talks about. So I think I would, to answer your question, I would still write in the same vein, story-wise. Like, it would be the same nature, but I probably wouldn't quite understand as deeply as what I'm really searching for as the teaching has shown me.
People who are familiar with my presentations know that I quote a lot from secular music, and I grew up listening to the popular music and the culture in the 70s and 80s, and I find it a beautiful confirmation of Catholic teaching going to secular sources, because what happens then when you look at a song like Bruce Springsteen singing Everybody's Got a Hungry Heart, you find there just what the church is saying. There's this ache in us. There's this hunger. And it's not something the church imposes on the world. It's something that wells up from within. And true art, whether it's music or painting or sculpture or architecture, it comes from the heart. And the artist is the one who's courageous enough to say, I'm going to look at what's going on in me, and I'm going to express it. I'm going to bring it out through sounds, through colors, through melodies, through lyrics, through sculpture, through painting, or whatever your particular art is. What I love about Mike is that he looks inside his heart, what's really going on, and he expresses it. And he expresses it in his music in a beautiful way, which gives it a universal appeal. I want to characterize Mike's music properly. It's when we say his music is themed with theology of the body, it's not like he's singing, "We are made in the image of God," which is a fine song. If you want to say,
that actually is one of my new songs.
Oh, it is.
Yeah. So I don't know if you heard it before, but there's a leak, and I'm pretty upset.
Oh, sorry, Mike. Sorry, didn't want to let that out too soon.
No.
And I don't mean that as a slight against what you might call a more explicit Christian song.
Mm-hmm.
But Mike is just, as an artist, he's singing from his heart. And that is reflected in what he's singing about and in the way he sings about it. He's one of those guys who sings from the ache and opens his rib cage when he's on stage and gives us a vision into his heart. And that's really what theology of the body is all about, making the invisible visible. That's what Christianity is about. That's what the incarnation is about. The invisible God has made himself visible. God has expressed his heart in the incarnation. And that's why art is so linked with Christianity. Whether you want it to be or not, art is in a way inherently Christian, because you are trying to express what's going on inside.
Just to kind of give you an example, when I really started coming into understanding what it meant to be Catholic, I was kind of taking my girlfriend's lead, who's now my wife, by the way. When hanging out with a lot of her friends, they just assumed that because I was a musician, I had to have been a Christian musician. And I didn't, to be honest, I didn't really identify with a lot of the music they were showing me. I never really felt I couldn't, where I was at that point standing, I couldn't identify with the songs they were showing me. But the themes and the truths that these people discussed about in their social times hanging out together, I identified with, like, I heard the same thing in, like, Wilco songs and in Gillian Welch songs and Peter Gabriel songs and Bryan Adams songs. Like, there, it's not, it's the same, we're all having the same conversation.
Greatest band ever.
Okay, I'm sorry, Van Halen songs. Is that right? No?
No, no.
Oh, sorry, you too, you too.
You too, okay. You too, come on.
Yeah, that was an easy one, though. I was trying to, you know, kind of go out. But we're all having the same conversation. Now, the challenge is, are we going to go to a common place of terminology and point to, you know, are we going to common place of, and in that conversation point to something greater? And I think that's what this teaching did for me. It just helped me. But I see all that stuff, and it's great because I don't have to throw away all my old CDs. You know, if anything, I turn them up even louder, so.
Yeah, I think there's probably a few listeners and myself who at some point had done the purge of the collection.
I did that once too. You know, when I first came to my faith, I had you know, been raised with all the secular music, and some of it, to be honest, was not very uplifting, shall we say. And when I came back to my faith in my early 20s, I went through the purge. You know, I got rid of a lot of my secular music, and I think we go from one extreme to the next often. It took several years for me to regain a balance and get to a place where I started realizing, wow, that music I listened to as a teenager is, as Mike is saying, is so often, not always, but often touching on these very same themes. I call these musicians the twisted mystics. You know, people like Bruce Springsteen, people like Bono and U2, and I mean, even a banal band like Bon Jovi, you know, you can listen to these lyrics. They're singing about this yearning for love, and they're looking in their hearts, and this is what's coming out. And this is, again, where we see this confirmation that the church's teaching is not imposed on us from the outside. It wells up from within.
It's micro to macro.
Micro to macro, exactly. It's inside us, and then it goes out. And then it confirms also the other way, which is macro to micro, where Christ comes down from heaven down to our level. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful confirmation. And this is why, as Pope Benedict has said, as John Paul II emphasized, as Paul VI emphasized, there is a commonality, a common ground, a friendship between the church and the world's artists. And that has to be emphasized. That has to be drawn out. There is a common language here between the artist and the Christian, because artists and Christians are seekers.
You're touching on a topic that I do want to bring back up again a little bit later. Yeah, I am completely on board with everything you're saying. We live in a world that doesn't always quite see it that way, and it sometimes can lead to some misinterpretations, especially as it pertains to spreading the word about the theology of the body, and maybe we can get into that a little bit later. But first, I wanted to have Mike, I don't know if you wanted to maybe introduce your song, or if you just wanted to play. Or...
Play the one I'm playing?
Yeah.
Sure, this is a new song I'll play for you. It's on the there's a new release called Offering that is, oh no, that's my tape.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, no, but thank you. I appreciate you looking out.
A bug or something on your guitar.
No, it's taped so I know where the frets are.
Well, now you have to tell everybody that you play upside down.
I play upside down, so I have to put tape on the other end of...
Mike sees the world differently.
It's the way, I think, historically, it's the way all the cool people do it. Not sure, but I'm pretty confident. But really, really briefly, I just want to say one of the coolest things connecting the conversation is... one of the coolest things I heard Christopher say once at a talk was... And you got to be, you know, the difference is, what's the intention of the artist, and are they producing art that is meant to be an idol or meant to be an icon? And I mean that in the truest sense. Is the art, through its beauty, drawing you out of yourself and pointing you to a greater mystery, or is it just trying to show you how good that artist is? And so you got to be careful with art. And I mean be careful by, there is really crappy art out there. But for the most part, there's some really good, really, really, really great stuff. In the quote secular world, and we can't just put it to the side. I remember Christopher once saying, "You encourage the audience to go back throughout their life and look at the songs that moved them throughout their life, look at the themes, and see how that connected to where they were at that time in their history." And you were saying, "I bet you there's some deep deep meaning. There's some deep connection to where you were spiritually at the time of your life." And that's not like something you push aside. That's something you mine, and that helps us understand our past, present, future. So, but I'll play a song because I'm better at playing songs. This is a song called "Woman and Gown," and it's on the new album "Offering," and it's just a I guess it's just kind of a letter to a woman. So. Frost on the sheets when the sun went down. There's no place to lay your head. You stand in this valley, tears all around as he stands as your jury instead. He holds you in bribe as you try to hide what is sacred. He objects to dismiss. Oh, oh, woman in gown, you were made for much better than this. And we fashion our breath to the lowest of depth, and let pleasure be the host of what's real. But I say let's sacrifice, boys. We'll smother their noise as the goods they've been fixing to steal. And I'm only a man, please understand, but won't you take my hand, I insist. Oh, oh, woman in gown, well, you were made for much better than this. Oh, sleep, my dear, may you rest till disorder has been fixed. No, oh, woman in gown, you were made for much better than this. Yeah. We try to deceive, to make you believe that you can be held and dropped on a dime. Nothing, my dear, should be held in the fear that a drop is just natural with time. And no, I cannot be taken or your value forsaken. Deny the Judas kiss. And oh, oh, woman in gown, you were made for much better than this. Here, sends home my bride. Never compromise. Let me show you where our promise is missed. Oh, woman in gown, you were made for much better than this. Yeah, you were made for much better than this.
This is Bill Howard, editor of the Colorado Catholic Herald, filling in for Bishop Michael Sheridan on Bishop Sheridan Presents. And we're here this episode with very special guests who are in town for a very special, unique, innovative, artistic theology of the body presentation called Fill These Hearts. By the time you've heard this episode, we'll have already had this event. It's September 18th at the Pikes Peak Center. And we're going to spend this segment talking about Fill These Hearts, just kind of the genesis of it. It is fairly new, and we're very blessed that we're able to have it here kind of in its early stage, and they've chosen us as kind of a testing ground for development. But there's also a lot that's been, looks like it's been working, and we're going to have them explain as best they can for our listeners just what Fill These Hearts is about.
Well, as a teacher of theology, I'm always looking for ways to get complex theological truths to register not just in the intellect of my students, but in their hearts. Theology that just stays in the head and is just an intellectual exercise, it's really a dead letter. It has to not only inform us intellectually, it has to transform us. And the real gift of art is that it's that, like I have an image of a coin going into a fountain or something, it's that kerplunk, where these truths can really go kerplunk in the heart. The heart opens up the coin goes in, if you will, the truth goes in, and it rests there. It finds a place there. Music is, really, you could say, music is God's language. God is singing to us. He's singing a song. He's singing a love song. Scripture calls it the greatest song ever, the Song of Songs. God is singing to us. There's something about music that opens the heart to the love of God. St. Augustine said, when you sing, you're praying twice. To sing itself is a prayer. Mike, as a musician, is someone I really respect, who has allowed these truths really to register in his own heart. And so, as he was saying earlier, it's reflected in his music. And he and I, in conversation over the years, have just thought, how could we combine this? How could his art be something that comes into my presentations, and my presentation something that comes into his art, in a way that we have an integrated presentation of message that registers, yes, in the intellect, but then can also open you up in the heart. It's not, Mike's music is not entertainment at a Christopher West lecture. That's the wrong way to look at it. It's an integral part of the presentation of the message. The first time we really did this was at World Youth Day in Sydney. We had a three-night event in Sydney, and each night it was a packed house, about 3,000 young people each night, and the way Mike and I played off one another with his music and my message, it was the first time we really did it, but it worked very well, and we thought about expanding it, and I'll let Mike say more about how that all unfolded.
Yeah, we just knew that there was something going on when after World Youth Day. It was really special. I mean, it was a big audience, but they're all there to hear something, and they're all there to feel something, and you know, so they're willing to be quiet during Christopher's talk. Now the true test is, are they going to be quiet during the music? And they were. And so to have 3,000 people collectively sit there and take in each note and each word and each melodic move completely is such a gift. And actually what happens is the audience takes it in, and I the band knows it, and the band feeds from the receptivity of the audience. And really, the audience and band become greater than their individual parts. It becomes this whole new communion of performance.
It was fun, if I can just interject, over the three nights that we performed together, Mike was performing and I was giving the presentations. Most of the young people knew my name, and you know, they were like, Christopher West, Christopher's here. But then by night two, they started chanting and screaming for Mike too. So he had really won their hearts over. It was really fun to see.
Yes, and it went straight to my head. I became a jerk soon after. It was really bad.
Hey, but your dressing room demands here tonight are pretty pretty heavy.
Yeah, man. There's my green M&Ms and there becomes this beautiful communion between performer and audience, and it becomes something that it's beautiful because it exists only for those 2 hours or that 1 hour, whatever. It exists then, and then I go my way, they go theirs, and it's over, and it's never going to happen again. That's why people say, man, Bob Dylan in Chicago in 76, I was at that show, because that means something, mm-hmm. right?
That or U2 at Red Rocks in 1983.
This is Red Rocks.
This is Red Rocks.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so my point is, the music wasn't just coming off as, okay, now we're going to do some music. You guys, if you got to go to the bathroom, go to the bathroom. It came off as a continuation of the communion between presenter, Christopher, Mike, and audience. It became a resource. It became something valuable to the soul. And so we walked away from that just knowing that we had to do something. But we didn't want to rush it, and we definitely didn't rush it. And we didn't right away come up with this event. Like, we knew, all right, what's it going to be? Well, I don't know. You go back home, I'll go back home, and maybe we'll talk about it. But just naturally, it's developed into this program.
Yeah, you know, one thing that it really excites me about Fill These Hearts is, you know, the theology of the body. I mean, a lot of people who study theology of the body know of George Weigel's quote of the TOB as a theological time bomb set to go off. I discovered theology of the body in the late 90s, and it's just been this massive, really quick growth and just spreading around the world for the theology of the body. However, I mean, I feel like I kind of connect with you guys in terms of your backgrounds and just your love of music and the arts. It just seemed like there's been a ton of lectures that people can go to and seminars and workshops, but you know, we're all from the beginnings of what is now basically, you know, the multimedia generation, or you know, two or three of them actually. And so, you know, that to me, I felt like things were not hitting a ceiling, you know, but they kind of like you, that could only, like you said earlier, it can only go so far. And that's why when we got the call from Mark Wassmer, who is the head of Furrow 24, is a production company that's bringing Philly's Hearts here, and he explained what you guys are trying to do, it was just like the clouds parted. It was like, finally, we have something, you know? And it sounds like it was a very organic growth process, which I think affirms it even more.
Mm. Nobody here on the team was putting us on as trying to take credit for these works of grace. We give our fiat to the Lord, and he works through very broken instruments, which we all are. But you're putting your finger on something very important, Bill. And I'd put it this way, the calling card, if you will, for what we're trying to do is when Jesus says in that parable about the, you know, the wedding feast, and he invites these people and they don't come, and invites the other people and they don't come. And then he says, go out into the main streets and invite everyone to the wedding feast. That's what we're trying to do. And if you're going to go out into the main streets, well, you better speak the language that people in the main streets speak. Because if you go out into the main streets with a very, I don't know what the word is, a bunker kind of language. Now that can sound derogatory. I don't mean it derogatorily, but a bunker language in that, you know, just Catholics talking amongst themselves with words that we understand. You go out into the wider audience and they're not going to get the message. And this is the whole challenge of enculturation and where you don't water down the gospel for a given audience, but you understand the language of the given audience and you put the gospel in that language. I once had someone read my book who was not a Catholic, but was a seeker, a real honest seeker. He was actually a musician. And he sent me an email and he said, you know, I'm trying to understand what you're saying in your book, but I don't speak Catholic. And that has stayed with me. Like, how do I reach this guy? I want to reach him with this beautiful vision, but he doesn't speak Catholic. So I got to find his language to put, not to water down the truth, but to put the truth in a language that anybody can understand on Main Street.
Can I even add to that? I would even take it even farther and say it's not to find a language so that we can bring it to him. It's to bring the gospel out of the main.
What's already there. Because we're all made in the image of God already. These truths are already in us. This is a very important point Mike is making. Because without this distinction, then we're going out to impose something from the outside, which we're not doing. We're going out into the main street to show Main Street who they really are. One of John Paul's favorite expressions is become what you are. And that's really what the theology of the body enables us to do. It enables us, whoever we are, wherever we are, whatever our struggles are, to become what and who we really are as men and women made in the image and likeness of God. Good point, Mike.
Yeah, I just had this image of, remember the picture I saw, or maybe in a video of John Paul II sitting, and in front of him were some hip-hop, breakdancers, performing.
Yeah.
And he was just sitting there, like, tapping along to it. What, John Paul II coming from the streets of, like, Brooklyn? No. But, I mean, like, he didn't. But the fact is he can appreciate the gifts that they're presenting right there. He sees the goodness in breakdancing. Like, you know, and if we just write that off as, you know, secular hip hop culture, the wheat is out the door.
And we miss something. We miss an opportunity to grow. We miss an opportunity to be enriched. I love that it's going along the same thing. I love those pictures of John Paul II, like in a native headdress when he visited the Native Americans, or when he was in Papua New Guinea and he had all those feathers all over him and stuff. That's an image of what we're about.
So it's like it's finding a common language, using the language of the goodness of the main streets and the gospel where we're coming from, and finding where we can see how they're actually related.
And that's what the word Catholic means. Yeah. Catholic means universal, and the true Catholic in that sense of universal is not afraid of where truth exists. We affirm, as Catholics, we affirm wherever we find truth. You know, John Paul II, who spent his life fighting communism, also was courageous enough to affirm the elements of truth in Marxist philosophy. So we can't just run away from the culture. There is truth to be found in the culture. And this goes back to a point of very important point of Catholic theology. And this is different from the theology of the Reformation. The Reformation ended up teaching that the human being is utterly depraved. And if we have that theology, and a lot of people, whether they know it or not, if you're raised in America, we kind of eat, live, and breathe a theology of utter depravity. If you think that way, you're going to look at Hollywood, for example, and you're going to look at the depravity in Hollywood, and you're going to conclude it's utterly depraved. And then you separate yourself out, and it's like you become almost an Amish Catholic, right? And I live in Amish country in Pennsylvania. I love the Amish. There's so much to admire there. But the Amish, by their own admission, are not evangelists. They've taken themselves out of culture and become their own little enclave. If we are to evangelize, then we have to go into the culture and see what is already good in the culture. Is Hollywood depraved? Yes, it is. Is it utterly depraved? No, it is not. Which means there is wheat and weeds growing together, and we need to learn how to discern the difference and say, here is wheat. Here's some real wheat, and don't throw out this movie just because there's weeds in there too. Jesus said, we can't just yank the weeds out because they're growing together. In God's providence, they're growing together. We really have to take Jesus at his word when he says that.
There's a term that I hear often, and I hear more and more now, I guess in relation to the theology of the body, and it's the sacred secular. Now, is that what you're kind of touching on, with the sacred secular, that there are elements within secular society that might be misguided attempts at fulfilling
yes.
desires, but tying into the twisted mystic notion and everything, am I correct in that, or am I misreading that term?
Here's how I talk about the sweet spot between the sacred and the secular. Bruce Springsteen, as I said earlier, sings, "Everybody's got a hungry heart." Well, we as Catholics have a song that meets him right there. "You satisfy the hungry heart with gift of finest wheat." There's the touch point that we're after. It's that touch point between the sacred and the secular, where we affirm what is already in the human heart, that hunger, that yearning, that longing. We don't condemn people for all the misguided ways they've tried to satisfy the hunger. We propose that there is bread come down from heaven to satisfy the hunger. If we are created for the infinite, then when we go to something finite to satisfy the hunger, we're going to become an addict. Because the finite doesn't satisfy, so we think we need more and more and more and more of it. We get addicted. What do we do with our desire? I think we will either become an addict, a stoic, or a mystic. I already mentioned the addict. The stoic is the one who thinks desire is bad, and they repress, repress, repress. And they think Christianity is repressing desire but following all these rules, and then you become a good, upstanding Christian citizen. No, stoicism is not Christianity. Christianity is an invitation to mysticism. And the mystic is the one who is just as deeply in touch with the ache and the hunger as Bruce Springsteen is. But the mystic is the one who has found the banquet. The mystic is the one who has found that bread come down from heaven, and is ready to go out into the world, not with a list of rules to beat people over the head with, but with an invitation. Hey, you know, Mick Jagger can't get no satisfaction. Well, can we say to Mick Jagger, I have encountered a living hope of satisfaction. Come and see for yourself.
And to go along the lines we were talking about, the language of sacred and secular, for me, there's no better example for me in my life than when I first heard theology of the body. Because when I was sitting in that chair for the first time 10 years ago, listening to Christopher talk, present the theology of the body, it was very hard. And I got to be honest, I didn't like it that much, because it was challenging and it was taking me out of the normal ways that I have done things for, at that time, 22 years. So my natural reaction was to be defensive and
I loved him for it, because it meant he was engaging it.
Right. And I wanted, if you're going to sell me something, it better be easy, because I don't want to move. You know, I'm 22 years old. I know a lot, right? That's what I thought. But, Here's my point, is that what I loved about it is I did not feel like John Paul II was saying, this is it, take it, or you'll be like, you'll hate yourself, you're doomed. I honestly felt like John Paul II came up to me, put his hand on my shoulder and said, Mike, I know you feel this. I know you feel this, I feel it too. And I know when you feel this, these things happen. All right. But Mike, I'm coming to affirm that in you, but I'm also coming to affirm that and point it to that and point to something greater. And I felt like the teaching was coming to me, recognizing where I was and pointing me beyond, where beyond myself and beyond where I could ever go, wherever I ever thought I could go. For that reason alone, the teaching was coming. It was speaking my language. It was meeting me where I was, and it wasn't forcing anything on me, but it was presenting. And if I'm honest with myself, I will smell and recognize the truth and goodness that it was presenting, and I'd walk towards it because I was hungry and it was providing food. That basic example of how theology of the body approached me is the same thing we're trying to do with Fill These Hearts. We're not trying to show you, all right, you know, this is from John Paul II, so these are what this is what the church
this is
teaches.
What the Pope teaches, you better accept it,
you better do it, or else good luck out there. We're not saying that at all. Mm-hmm. We're trying to meet with people together where they're at and where we're at, because I don't have it figured out, and I tell you, the moment I leave, I'm probably going to do 12 things wrong that John Paul II wouldn't have ever done, right? So but
only
my
12
only well maybe 11, I don't know. I'm getting better, but my point is, we are trying to create an environment where we can look at this, these realities and these human emotions, human commonalities, universal themes within our lives as human beings from every background, looking at it together in a room, literally looking at it through art, experiencing something together as a community, and reflecting on it. And we're not going to say, and if you leave here after you reflected on it and you think this, well, you're wrong. No, no, no. Reflect on it. All right? Go your own way, and maybe we'll meet each other down the road. But we just want to have that comfortable room, that comfortable environment, what I like to call the moment when John Paul II put his hand on my shoulder and said, and affirmed me in that moment. That's all we're, that's what we're trying to, that's why we have the lights and the music and the art and the dancers.
Some of our listeners probably just veered off the road real
quick
there.
Sorry. That was a joke. Sorry.
But, well, we're going to take our final break here and come back with our last segment. Before we break, Mike and Christopher, do you want to just give our listeners some ways to they can learn more about what you're doing?
So my name is Mike Mangione, and the band is Mike Mangione and the Union. And we're a touring act. We're out on the road playing clubs and festivals and bars all over the country. So you can find out more about what we're doing at MikeMangione.com. And Mangione, it's like Chuck Mangione. You spell it Mangione. And then we have MySpace / Mike Mangione, YouTube, all that stuff. We're all over the web, so you can find us there.
Yeah, ChristopherWest.com will take you to my articles and resources, and there's a course I teach through the Theology of the Body Institute, a 5-day course we offer throughout the year. If people are interested in really going in depth with this teaching, consider coming out to Pennsylvania for 5 days and taking the course. You took the course, Bill. You want to share your experience?
Oh, yeah. I took it, I want to say, a year and a half ago, and it was fantastic. It was, I've read the books, and I've seen Christopher talk. We even had Christopher here. St. Patrick Church in 2007, I think, and we had an awesome response to that. Anyone who has a desire to go deeper after listening to CDs and watching DVDs, I strongly recommend doing the immersion course. It will definitely ramp things up to a higher level, and it just better equips you to be able to go back out into the world, into your communities, and to be able to to share that great news with all of your brothers and sisters out there. So, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up.
And Mike does a show during the course of the week, too, so you get to see Mike perform.
Yeah, I do a little Wednesday night concert. So,
I think we're going to go into the break now with a studio track from Mike Mangione and the Union. This is from their new album called The Offering, and I believe this track is called At Your Gate. And Mike, Christopher, I don't know if you want to introduce this song.
This is one of my favorite songs of Mike's. Can I tell him how you wrote it?
Oh, yeah.
He actually wrote this song after reading my book, Heaven's Song. I felt really honored when Mike first played this song for me because it really put to music the longing that I was trying to write about in my book. It talks about someone who's been used and wounded by living a distorted life and then directs the hunger towards the gates. And by gates here, we're talking about, you know, entering into the inner sanctuary where God and man meet in the holy temple. And Mary is a figure of that temple where God comes to meet us in and through Mary, the woman. So it's a beautiful reflection and meditation on human longing and wanting to enter that inner sacred chamber where we can encounter God.
So yeah, so at a show I would say something about this song would be like, this is about standing at the line when you're in complete despair, you know, feeling the weight of the world down upon you and just at your deepest moments, you stand up to a line that you feel you can't cross, and you look over into an area that you want. It might be a better life, a happier life, better relationships, whatever it is, just something better than where you are now, and you're standing at that line looking in.
Come out, come out, come meet me. I've been poisoned, I've been used, and now I'm standing at your gate, and I am hanging on your gate, and I'll be standing at your gate. And in my days I ruled deception, I was king, I had control, but I deceived all those I hold, and they flamed in the gold. And now I'm standing at your gate. And oh, your side while I was blinding on my eyes. Yeah. And when I left, I had direction. I have protection, I was free. But they do not compromise. No, they did not compromise. And now I'm standing at your gate. You. I came to let you take me in, and we are born where we begin. that burns within. Yeah, 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 yeah. And there's a song of songs you're singing, and I've been bleeding as a line. How I want to harmonize. Yes, I need to harmonize. And I'll be singing.
Listening to Bishop Sheridan Presents. I'm Bill Howard, editor of the Colorado Catholic Herald, filling in for Bishop Sheridan, who is out of town right now. And I'm here with our special guests, Christopher West and Mike Mangione, who are in town this the weekend of September 18th to perform Fill These Hearts, a innovative artistic theology of the body presentation. And we're really blessed to have them here. And we're in our final segment. So as we before we start to wrap things up, I just wanted to turn the spotlight a little bit towards Christopher. And Fill These Hearts is taking place right on the heels of a six-month sabbatical you took. And you know, you look good, you look refreshed and relaxed and at peace. How was the sabbatical for you? And did you gain any new insights, or did you just chill out?
Well, I needed to chill out because I had been on the road for over 10 years without any substantial break. And I think I was on a 500-mile-an-hour train. In my zeal to share this teaching around the world, I maybe got a little overzealous, and my life was out of balance. And when I look back on the last few years, I could almost hear the Lord whispering to me, slow down, slow down, you know, balance. You know, I kept hearing Mr. Miyagi, balance, Daniel-san, not just karate, whole life. But I was not listening. You know, I was like, no, I gotta spread the theology of the body around the world. And so the Lord needed to turn up the volume a little bit, and there's a whole confluence of circumstances, family situations, personal situations, little health issues that I needed to look at. But for everybody who's been lifting me up in prayer during the last 6 months, I'm really grateful. I didn't have a heart attack or anything. Everything's fine. I did need to just look at my life and be with my family and examine some issues in my life that needed my attention. I'm back now. I'm going to be, God willing, a little bit more balanced in my life. Going to cut back on my travel a good bit. I was just traveling way too much. And I feel like I'm at the beginning of a new stage of my ministry and mission. And I'm delighted to continue. God willing, I'm going to be doing this for many years. And I really do believe that this theology of the body is meant to go around the world. And I think it will.
You know, I think we were really blessed that we were able to have our local press coverage of Fill These Hearts. And they all kind of plugged it in their own unique ways. You know, when I have to smile just having known you for a while, you know, whenever the articles that came out here were Christopher West, and then shortly after you would see controversy, you know?
And so it's good press right there.
Yeah, it was. So, I mean, I before we ended, I wanted to just touch on something we talked about earlier, how when you first discover the theology of the body, it can be a pretty come across as a radical message. Mm-hmm. But then after you start living it, it just obviously it just makes sense.
Why does it raise so much controversy?
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly.
First, I want to acknowledge that the last perfect evangelist ascended to heaven 2,000 years ago. So, you know, my critics, I've always listened to them. They've helped me fine-tune my presentations over the years. And I've admitted this on many occasions, that when I first started this work, gosh, 12, 15 years ago, I was really green. I mean, I was really green. I had all this enthusiasm. I wanted to share this message, but I didn't know how to do it. I didn't know the right language to use. So, yeah, I don't take any issue with the fact that critics have pointed out some things in the past and that needed some real work. It's been a process of trial and error to find the right language, images, anecdotes, to get some really dense theology out to a popular audience. At the same time, I think we have to acknowledge that a lot of Christians are uncomfortable talking about their sexuality. We are really uncomfortable in our own skin. And maybe we have overreacted to the license out there, all the pornographic ridiculousness that's going on in the culture, which is so sad and is destroying so many lives. Sometimes we overreact and go to another extreme and we end up rejecting the body. It is easier to reject the body than it is to actually look long and hard at the deep wounds and hurts and issues in our lives that cause us to reject the body. But that rejection of the body is an age-old heresy called Manichaeism, which basically says spirit good, body bad. That is not Christianity. So when you start talking about the body and human sexuality and the intimacy of husband and wife in the marriage bed as something holy, as something sacred, when you take seriously what St. Paul says in Ephesians 5, that the one flesh union is a great mystery that refers to Christ and the church, well, people who are not used to thinking that way or talking that way, it's going to cause some discomfort. It's going to ruffle some feathers. A wise priest once said to me, you know, if the sinners are flocking to hear you and the scholars are up in arms about what you're saying, then there's a pretty good chance you're preaching the gospel, because that's what happened to Jesus. And that's not to say that I do it perfectly. I don't. So my critics have their points. But you can see that going on. The sinners, the sexually broken, are flocking to this message. And the scholars, meantime, are having lots of very heated arguments and debates about it. I think that's kind of par for the course when you're going to bring the gospel message out into the world. It's to be expected. Jesus told us it was to be expected.
Yeah, I think one of the most unfair criticisms of theology of the body is when people say they're just portraying this as theology below the waist.
Oh, you know, mercy.
And sometimes even with the way you present, it's never really hit me that way at all. I've always found everything pretty integrated. But I mean, is that something that you've encountered?
Oh, sure. I hear all kinds of, I heard theology of, not theology of the body, but theology of the body, that it's all very body. You know, those kind of insults I don't think are very helpful, but it does reveal how uncomfortable, even that expression, below the waist. We need all these euphemisms to talk about our actual bodies as God made them. Why are we so afraid of the way God made us? God made us in our masculinity and femininity, and it is not a side issue. John Paul II says that the mystery of our sexuality, our being created male and female, is the fundamental fact of human existence. It's the fundamental fact. The most important question a man can ask himself is, what does it mean to be a man? The most important question a woman can ask herself is, what does it mean to be a woman? And let's acknowledge those are sexual questions. By that I mean questions about our sexuality, our being created male and female. We're so quick to reduce sexuality to sexual activity. And I'm very quick to point out that sex is not first an action word. It's not first a verb. It's a noun. It's an identity. It's who we are. Haven't you read, Jesus says, that in the beginning God made them male and female and called the two to be one flesh? There is so much confusion in the world about this today. The church has the answer. The church has the solution to the sexual crisis going on in the world. We need to be courageous enough to talk about it. If we can't talk about it, then pornography is going to be continue to be what people go to answer their questions about sexuality. And that's absolutely unacceptable.
Yeah, I hear some rumbling in the hallway, so I think that means that we'll probably maybe wrap it up next 5 or 10 minutes. Before, I wanted to have Mike play another song for our listeners, and then we'll tell you guys how to go listen to more of Mike's music. But before we do that, do either of you have any closing comments for our listeners?
As far as Philly's Hearts goes, for anybody listening, I'd say definitely check it out. There's a website. It's www.phillyshearts.org. But you know, even I've heard a lot of people say, "Oh, okay, well, you know, I've heard Christopher West before. You know, I'm good. Thank you. I don't need to go." It's something bigger than Christopher West. It's a whole production that takes this teaching into an area that I've never seen before. So yeah, I'd say just have the courage. If you have no idea what we're talking about, check it out. If you think you know everything we're talking about, awesome. We'd love to meet you. Check it out. So either way, just get behind it, because we're doing this to get to know you and to share something with you. So
I would just close with this as a final reflection. God speaks the language of our own hearts. He knows us so personally. He knows the language of our hearts. And the language of our heart, our own individual heart, I'm not talking about a collective humanity here. I'm talking about Bill Howard's heart, Mike Mangione's heart, my heart, Christopher West, and the heart of each individual listener out there. He knows the language of our hearts. And the language of our hearts is so often connected with the art that we appreciate, the art that has moved us. Mike was saying earlier how I call people just to reflect on what have been your favorite songs throughout your life. God's trying to say something through those songs to you. What's been your favorite movie, your favorite poem, your favorite TV series? There's a reason we're attracted to these things. And even the corrupt stuff, even the bad stuff that maybe we've been caught up in our lives or attracted to, God can speak to our hearts there also, because evil is nothing but good gone wrong. And redemption is not rejecting the world. Redemption is untwisting what's gotten twisted up through evil so that we can see the good that's behind it. So even the distorted things we've been attracted to in life, there is a good behind it that God wants to use to speak to our hearts. So maybe pull out one of those old albums from way back when and listen to one of those old songs and just let the Lord speak to you. Why was that song important to you? Maybe he wants to say something to you.
Christopher and Mike, thanks again for being here. Mike, what would you like to play for us?
So this is a song. It's a brand new song. And actually, I haven't played it. I played it like 4 times. First time I wrote the song, actually, first time I played the chords was the first. I just had a baby 3 months ago. My wife did. I watched. Yeah. I watched, and held her hand. At some point between now and then, my baby's name is Avila Rose, and put her down on the couch, and I was like, see if this works. And I started playing guitar, and I actually played these chords. So she eventually started crying, but I was like, just hold on, baby. This is really good. I gotta write this down. I'm a really good father, by the way. It's called Fields of Evermore.
From the moon, and heavy is the burden that comes too soon. The fields are hot and heavy, the fields are draped with stone. I'm gonna work the land from my father till the seed has been sown. Somehow in the fields of the evermore mercy, come and hold me now, get behind the plow, yeah, mercy, come and hold me now, and get behind the plow, mercy, mercy, hold on, get behind, from watching, my heart from pain. When the bundle fall, burn them all to find the yield again. The hand stretched for the bottle, I walk the furrow with an offering. I can wash my hands too often, boys, on account of the burn and sting. And I'm gonna make it rain somehow. I'm gonna make it rain somehow in the fields of the evermores. Hold me now, get behind the plow. Mercy, come and hold me now, get behind the plow. Mercy, mercy, hold on, get behind the field of evermore. Say, mercy, come and hold me now. Get behind the plow. Mercy, come and hold me now. Get behind the plow. Mercy, mercy, hold on. Get behind, get behind, get behind.
In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, I just want to preface this prayer by, as Mike was singing that song, I had this image of our hearts as men and women, where we all want to be that fertile soil where the seed can go in, and that cry that Mike had for mercy in that song, and have mercy on me now, get behind the plow. It's the sense of our, sometimes our hearts can be so hard, they need to be plowed up, so that the soil that has been hard, or where there's rocks in the soil, they can come out. So Jesus, I just ask that wherever our hearts might be hardened to your love out of fear, maybe past hurts or failings, maybe our own sin where our hearts are just hard, we ask for that gentle love of that plow, which does pierce, but it pierces with gentleness, to just turn over our soil so that the seed that goes in can bear life for us and for others. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.